Hey, I'm Tracy Burns. I'm a financial advisor with UBS. Welcome to Five Things. So here you're going to learn five things and then you're going to move on because we all have things to do. I, as many of you know, I'm on a mission to help women through divorce, their transitions, empower them. They have a super soft spot for female founders and entrepreneurs. And of course, closing the wage gap. I have three teenagers, two are girls, so I have a personal vested interest in that. And this podcast is a small piece of helping us all get there. So be sure to listen to the ones that we've done. Five things your business should be thinking about, the five people you should be surrounding yourself with, when to admit failure. We've covered a lot of really cool things and talked to some really great people. And today, no different. Lisa Kaplowitz is with us right now. She's an assistant professor of finance, which is a rarity that a fun, fabulous woman is teaching finance at Rutgers University. She's also the director of the Center for Women in Business. Lisa, thanks for doing this.
Oh, thanks so much, Tracy. I love what you're doing.
Working mom, two boys, you get it. You get it. Like, it's real, right? And you two, we are, just for purposes of context, hopefully on the tail end of the COVID lockdown, whatever that was. But before we get into what we're talking about today, so part of the reason I reached out to you is one of the things I hear from female founders, female business owners, over and over again is they don't understand this notion of cash flow, this cash flow statement. And I thought, who better than, like, you know, the greatest finance professor to teach us about this and to explain it in a language that's English. Because oftentimes, and I have sat in these accounting classes when I did some graduate work, I didn't understand what the heck they were talking about. So before we put that in language that we can all get and use and profit from, let's talk quickly about the center. You spearheaded this. It's new. Why do we need a center for women in business?
Absolutely. Thank you. It's interesting. People, you're saying it kind of tug in cheek, but it's actually been asked in all seriousness, which is a mm-hmm. little bit of a mic drop there. Yeah. We need a center for women in business because all of the studies have shown us that women are not paid equally. Women are not represented equally. And as you climb up that corporate ladder, the statistics are worse and worse. And if you throw intersectionality into it and you're a woman of color, you're making even less on the dollar of the white man, and you're represented even less equally at those points. So that's why we're doing it. Our mission at the Center for Women in Business at Rutgers Business School is through education, opportunities, and thought leaderships, we will remove barriers, build community, and empower women with the confidence and skills necessary to succeed as business leaders.
And that's what it's about at the end of the day. It's equality. And I have said, and I've semi ripped the line off from Sally Krawcheck, so I will give her credit, but we will never have true equality if we don't have financial equality. And if you don't understand your finances, the finances of your business, we will never be able to fully compete.
You are absolutely correct. And not just compete within business, but these studies have shown that financial empowerment helps women's health, prevents domestic abuse, and really is the whole picture.
Correct. And if I hear one more time from a woman who says, I can't leave my horrible, horrible husband because I like my lifestyle and I don't know if I could do it without him, I might put a pen in my eye. So we have to change this. It's insanity that this stuff still exists. So as an accounting MBA, the dork side of me is super excited to talk about this stuff today, because there's basically three major financial statements that if you're running a business, you have to look at. Whether you're the creative director or not, if you are the founder and it is your business, you have to understand the financials, right? I think a lot of them make that mistake and think they could pawn that off.
That's true. No, you absolutely have to understand the financials. I tell my students all of the time that the financial statements tell a story. And if you can understand and read the financial statements, then you can understand the business. We do an exercise in class, which literally matches up the ratios from different companies' financial statements to those actual companies. And it's a thought exercise, but it really makes you think and understand. And it's how you evaluate companies within the same industry. It's how you evaluate your business on a period over period, year over year basis, and really look at the trends to see what improvements can be made. That said, though, Tracy, the financials are a lagging indicator. So they tell you what actually happened. They don't tell you what's going to happen.
In that the balance sheet is literally a snapshot. It's like a 1 minute in time, right? And then whereas your income statement is over a period of time, but it's still a period of time. That's why I think the cash flow statement is so underrated. It's so important, but I feel like it can be so confusing.
Yeah, well, let me help you with that. So it's really, and this is what I try to do in class as well. A lot of finance professionals and professors try to make this stuff sound really scary and use these big words. And I try to simplify it as much as possible because it's really not that hard. And finance in general is nothing more than some very basic sixth grade algebra. And I know it's sixth grade algebra because my son just finished sixth grade. So,
but I love that you just said that though, because I always said that with all due respect to the, you know, the white men of the world, they spoke in a lingo purposely to make you feel like you didn't understand. And really, right? That's it. They use code. They use a lot of acronyms. They love acronyms. And it's just to make you, it makes you feel like, well, they know something I don't, when that's not true at all.
Correct. And so what I try to do at the beginning of every class is I give a definition sheet, which, by the way, I've done when I was CFO at companies as well. One of the first things I did was I whiteboarded what sales actually is, because everybody has a different definition. And if you're trying to track it and measure it, if you're an account manager versus a finance person versus the wholesaler, you're going to have a very different view. Is it the sales that I sell to the customer? Is it the sales that I sell to the ultimate consumer and the customer is just the midpoint distributor? So you need to really understand that vernacular and really define it. And so I try to put everybody on an equal playing field. And what I found is not just women, but people from underrepresented populations also struggle with that same confidence. And so if we can just simplify it and put it into plain English, it's really, really not that hard.
Exactly. Which is why your 5 points are amazing. And we're going to dive right into them. Your first being cash is queen all day long. And that's something that I think people forget too, right? Because you're saying there are times you actually have to prioritize your cash over your profits. Why?
Correct. So can we back up for 1 second and just talk about what the cash flow statement is?
Yes, and then
switch back over there. I think that would be helpful. So it sounds like you've covered off balance sheets. It sounds like you've covered off income statements. The cash flow statement is the third statement. It is often ignored more than anything else. And as most folks know, GAAP-based accounting, which is how companies report their financials, is accrual-based accounting. So it's really confusing and not that intuitive in my mind. It talks about revenue or a sale is booked when that revenue is earned. So if you think about retail type companies, it's when the customer is sent the goods. So in an e-commerce business, it's not till it's shipped, but it doesn't talk about when that cash was actually received. There's a timing difference. And what the cash flow statement tries to do is reconcile and adjust for those timing differences. Now, a GAAP-based cash flow statement is going to end with the true cash position, but it still has a little bit of differences. So just to break down the cash flow real quickly, you start with what the beginning cash is. The beginning cash in the beginning of this quarter or this year is exactly equal to the ending cash in the prior year or prior quarter. From there, you take into account what your income was. Your income comes from your income statement. But as I said before, it includes all these non-cash items like depreciation. Depreciation is just the amount that you use that piece of equipment during that time period, but it's not really a cash outlay because you either financed that piece of equipment before or you already paid for it in cash. So it adjusts for all of those items like that. And also adjusts from there your cash to get to your cash from operations. It takes into account those timing differences from when you actually delivered that good or service to when that customer paid you, from when you received that good or service from your vendor to when you actually paid for it. And all of those working capital adjustments, which we'll talk about, are added back to that. And then the next section is your investment activities. right? When you're a finance manager, you have a choice of what you're going to spend your money on. Are you going to plow it back into the business, or are you going to invest it? Are you going to buy a company? Do you have excess cash and you're going to invest it in securities to try to earn a little bit of investment income? What are you going to do with that? And that's going to impact your investing activities. And then the third decision that a finance manager makes is, how is the business going to be financed? So if you are going to raise equity, you're going to give away a portion of your company. In exchange for that, you're going to get cash. Your cash is going to go up. If you're going to sell bonds, again, you're going to take on the debt, but you're going to get the cash from those bond sales. So your cash is going to go up. If you take your beginning cash, you add your cash from operations, which is hopefully positive, you add or subtract your cash from investing activities, you add or subtract your cash from financing activities, that's going to get you to your ending cash. It's literally five different points of information, and you're just doing arithmetic.
Too bad. Where were you when I was taking finance classes in the car? Right? because you're right. It's easy. And I think, again, sometimes we do this to ourselves, or we fall for it, that, oh, they're speaking a language we don't understand, and we're not even going to bother. When, by the way, if you are running a business, you have to bother. Okay, so now let's hop back into your 5 points. That cash is queen, and there are times, sometimes it is more important to prioritize your cash over your profit. Why?
Right, well, let's think about case in point right now. We're in this middle of this pandemic. And great, you could be profitable, but you still might not have enough cash to keep the lights on or pay your employees. Because again, the income statement is an accrual-based accounting statement. I don't care what the financial statements say. At some time, you've got to figure out how much cash you need to literally keep the lights on. And from there, my second point is, understand what your working capital needs in your cash conversion cycle. This is critical. Your cash conversion cycle, especially in startup-based companies, is going to be one of the most important financial metrics that you track.
So what is that, though? What is your cash conversion cycle?
Your cash conversion cycle is made up of three components. It's made up of your days sales outstanding, plus your days inventory outstanding, minus your days payable outstanding. Okay, I'm going to talk through what each of those things are quickly. Mm-hmm. You want the sum or the equation, days sales outstanding plus days inventory outstanding minus days payable outstanding, to be as small as possible. Okay, that's how many days it takes from the time that you spend $1 on your expenses. So think of it as inventory, basically. $1 on your inventory, when you're paying out the cash for that inventory, up through until the time that you receive the cash from your customer.
Right.
That's your cash conversion cycle. How many days is it taking you from when you have to lay out cash for your goods to when your customer is actually paying you cash for those goods?
Right. So like a total exaggerated example would be, you know, the companies that make airplanes. They lay out so much money before they actually sell one of those things. So that's huge timeline, right? Versus like, you know, a restaurant, I suppose, is their cash conversion cycle could be much smaller, because while I do have to buy the ingredients, I make it, I cook it, you eat it, I get paid.
So such a good extreme examples. Like you nailed it. You could teach my class.
I don't know about that.
So that's really critical. So if you think of accounts receivable, right? Accounts receivable is the difference between when you've sold the customer the good and when that customer pays you. You want that to be as small as possible, right? So if you think about an airplane, making an airplane, you might have a percentage of completion. You're selling it to a business, so the business is going to have terms. And so there's going to be a long time between when you sell that customer something until they pay you for it. If you think of a restaurant is a direct-to-consumer type purchase, right? You go into a restaurant, you either pay, you being the consumer, pay with a credit card or cash. If you pay with a credit card, the credit card pays that restaurant within 1 to 3 days, depending on the arrangement with the processor. So that day's sales outstanding, days receivable outstanding is going to be very, very small, you know, 1 to 3 days max. Now, if you think about the accounts payable, or sorry, the inventory, let's go to the next one, the inventory, which is another asset on your balance sheet. If you go to the inventory, also really long for an airline. They've got all these parts. They're probably purchasing the steel. It takes a long time to make an airplane. If you think about a restaurant, if that food's sitting there for a long period of time, that restaurant's not going to be in business much because everyone's going to get food poisoning.
Right, exactly.
So their day's inventory outstanding is going to be really, really small. And then the one lever that you want to stretch to be as big as possible is your accounts payable. And accounts payable is the exact opposite of accounts receivable. So your accounts payable is the amount of time between when you receive a good or service until you have to pay for it. And depending on a whole bunch of different factors can depend on how long that can be. And that isn't necessarily as industry specific.
But so these five things, right? Knowing your cash conversion cycle, your accounts receivable, your inventory, and your payables. I feel like just knowing those five things is almost enough to put you, you know, at a boardroom table with your financial staff, if it's not you, and ask intelligent questions. You know, like there's so many companies out there where they're, or say like a fashion designer who he or she hones, you know, their skill. They make whatever they design. They don't want to be involved in this other stuff, but just knowing these five things automatically makes you involved and automatically allows you to ask very smart questions about whether or not your company is going to make money at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And before I was a professor, I spent 20 plus years in industry, both on investment banking and on the company side, mostly in CPG and retail companies. And so from a retail standpoint, you know, one of the things you have to do is if you're selling to customers and you're selling to customers and those customers aren't actually paying you for the goods and services, if you're selling wholesale, why are you shipping them more inventory? So that's really key to manage your accounts receivable. And then inventory, if you think about it, as a finance person, there always should be this healthy tension between the head of sales or the president and the CFO. And for the finance gal, having a pile of crap in my warehouse just looks like a bunch of dollar signs to me. And that's much worse to me than a lost sale because I assumed a higher sell-through as we were doing our open-to-buy budgeting. And then on the payable side, I want to make sure that, yes, I'm paying my vendors on time because otherwise they're going to make me pay for goods and services before they even start manufacturing them. And that's going to make my cash conversion cycle really, really long because I'm going to have negative days payable outstanding because I'm going to have to prepay for my goods and services.
You know, it's interesting. So many of these things too could be applied to your own home, right? I mean, if we started Absolutely. To think about, because many of us wore loads of hats, especially during this whole COVID thing. And I know you have said this all the time, right? You're chief technology officer and you're definitely CFO and you're all this stuff of your own house. And if we think of that in this way, it could maybe actually help more women get involved financially at home as well. Much like you run, I mean, we're running businesses. We are more than, you know, 50% of working employed people are women. We're doing it out there. Why aren't we doing it at home? And these five things actually could absolutely be applied to your household.
Absolutely. I think it's very interesting. What I've learned personally within this COVID pandemic is all of what we do as professional women, we can use those same managerial techniques in our household.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell my husband I'm actually doing that Jedi mind trick on him, but you know, there was a book that was written years ago called I Don't Know How She Does, and it was about this hedge fund manager in London and how she was trying to manage basically her toddler and communicate with him to get him to do what she wanted to do. And so she started applying those same techniques on her boss and she found that her working relationship was actually going much better. So I've literally taken that in reverse. So getting buy-in and all of that has been critical within my household. So I am not cooking every single meal, and I am not cleaning the house by myself. It is extremely equally divided. I'm very lucky my kids are older, but it seems to have worked.
Yeah, I was just throwing, I was just offering money. Cash. Cash is queen around here. $20 to the first kid that cleans the bathroom.
Whatever, you have to find the motivational and compensation tool that works, right? Just like in business.
Exactly right. I mean, these are great 5 points, 5 tools. If you did not go get an MBA, you just got one, basically. You don't even have to go to school now. I don't know how to thank you for taking the time and explaining this in simple terms. It is English and it's practical and it's what people, women, entrepreneurs need to keep their businesses afloat, especially at a time like this.
Well, thank you, Tracy, for having me. And if you want to find out more about the Rutgers Business School Center for Women in Business, please visit our website at www.business.rutgers.edu/women.
Perfect.
This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. Neither UBS Financial Services, Inc. nor any of its employees provide tax or legal advice. You should consult with your personal tax or legal advisor regarding your personal circumstances. In providing wealth management services to clients, we offer both investment advisory and brokerage services, which are separate and distinct and differ in material ways. For information, including the different laws and contracts that govern, visit ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.